Hi, I'm KSL's Debbie Worthen. 4 years ago, my son Asher was diagnosed with autism. After getting our footing, we decided it was time to celebrate the news with all of you. And that's how Celebrating the Spectrum was born. Each week, we consult with the experts and others who are learning to navigate life with a loved one who has special needs. This is a place where we find hope, look for solutions, and connect with those working to create a better world of inclusion. Thanks for joining us. I'm Debbie Worthen, and this is an episode of Celebrating the Spectrum. And this week, we are talking to Stephanie Hanrahan. Stephanie describes herself as the seemingly average housewife until she grew tired of pretending and decided to make her private journal public. Since sharing her story, Stephanie has achieved viral success with her website, Tinkles Her Pants, which chronicles her journeys as a wife to a husband with a chronic illness, mother to children with autism, and a woman who often unravels, then finds her footing again. She can be found leaking nothing but the truth on the Today Show, CNN, Yahoo News, the Daily Mail, and most recently, her TED Talk, The Problem with Being Perfect. She is also the founder of the 501c3 nonprofit Labeled and Loved, which provides respite and resources for caregivers of disabled children, as well as the host of Labeled and Loved podcast. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Debbie. I'm thrilled to be here.
So I was browsing Instagram and, you know, with what I follow, your story came up and, you know, recommended for me. And I was absolutely fascinated by, you know, what you're putting out there. So will you tell us a little bit about your family?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, my Instagram is a little bit unorthodox, so to speak. So I started because when my daughter was diagnosed with autism, I was just, to be quite honest, a mess. Mm-hmm. And so I came home, put her down for a nap. I was completely negligent and unfamiliar with autism at that time. So I just buried my head in a pillow, screamed and cried. And then I grabbed my phone. I've always been someone who loved to journal and write, but I didn't have a paper journal at the time. And I also didn't have an Instagram. So grabbed my phone, opened a private account, and I was like, here, I'll always have my phone with me. This is the perfect place to pour down my authentic self and my grieving self at that point. And so I began journaling online to myself.
So you didn't have followers. This wasn't for likes, any of that.
No, my husband didn't even know I had it. It was just this private space to be myself. Meanwhile, I'm still, you know, publicly posting my prettiest moments, and here I am concealing my cracks on this private page. And so that process continued for about 2 years. And the reason I ended up opening that private journal to the world is because on my public page, and I didn't have a following, I just had, you know, a few family and friends on my public page, but somebody commented on our family photos. You know the family photos, yeah. Those perfectly curated moments. Right? You're your best self.
Yeah.
And someone said, you are perfect. And I just felt completely gutted.
Which is weird because that's like, you know, that's what people are wanting to hear, that validation.
Yes. And I think the difference was in the fact that for 2 years, I had had this practice of being my authentic self. So instead of that feeling, you know, filling me up with admiration and making me feel better, it made me feel really icky. There are parts of my life that I adore and they are very seemingly perfect, but there's this whole other side to me. So the thought just kind of came into my head, what if I let people see that side?
Was that scary or was it not scary?
Oh, yeah. I mean, at the time, I hadn't told anyone about a hair day, let alone my husband's bad heart. I mean, I was very private online.
Yeah, so tell us about your family. So let's start with your husband.
Yeah. Yes. So my husband, Sean, is, you know, you look at him and you think, you know, the epitome of physical health. He's tall. He's a former athlete, no physical disability in any way. And, you know, when our son was 6 weeks old and our daughter was 2, I found him unresponsive on our bedroom floor with a failing heart. And so we, you know, unbeknownst to us, we had no idea he had a very severe, very chronic genetic heart condition. So he will be getting a transplant at some point. He has a condition called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy.
Okay.
It's a very rare version. And so his heart is just overworked and tired and prone to stopping. And that's exactly what it did that day. It just flatlined. as he was getting out of bed. And the reason I am not a widow right now is during his flatline, he fell and broke his back on our nightstand. And that jolt of shattering his spine restarted his heart.
That is insane. Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So your kids were very small at the time.
Very young, 6 weeks and 2 years old.
All right. What did that do to you as a person when you saw that happen and really like your foundation of what you thought your family and life was really changed?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, up until this point in our marriage and in our family, I had had a very, I like to say, colorful life. I've had a lot of interesting and hard things happen to me. And when I met my husband, I just felt like now's my time. I can just coast, right? I'm going to coast right into that fairy tale. I've got my two kids. I've got my husband. Let's just throw up that white picket fence and call it a day. And when his heart stopped, it was right at the cusp of my daughter also presenting with some signs of autism. And so my world was rocked. I mean, everything that I envisioned for my family just completely disintegrated with those diagnoses. And very soon after, my daughter, my son would also be diagnosed. So the three family members I love the most all have these labels that, you know, affect us in profound ways. So to say I entered a stage of grief would be an understatement.
Right. No, I absolutely. Tell us about your two kids.
So Campbell is my daughter. She is now 8 years old. She is talkative and energetic and artistic and loves theater and singing and music and also has autism, which makes her creative and also socially challenged.
Right.
It's very difficult for Campbell to make friends and keep friends. The social norms that you and I just take as givens mm-hmm. are, you know, very perplexing to her.
Right,
so,
right. She can't, read the room. Yeah.
She can't read the room sometimes. And so we have to teach things that, you know, while some parents teach reading or math, I don't have to teach those things. I have to teach the importance of crossing roads safely or why we keep quiet voices in libraries or certain things that you kind of just kids usually pick up on. Those social emotional challenges are what really get Campbell.
And when was she diagnosed? How old was she?
She was three.
Just
now,
three.
I had been, okay. Yes, I had, when she got her official diagnosis, she was three. My antennas were up since about 18 months old.
Oh, and why so?
She was always that brilliant child. You know, mm-hmm. she was, and that's not, you know, doting mom talk. That's just truth.
Hey, on this show, if you have a kid who has autism, we know they've missed milestones. So you get to really brag about the ones that they just blow past.
Yeah, you get to talk about the good stuff.
Yes.
Well, she was just, you know, so much of what you hear, what I had, the stereotypical image of autism is not how Campbell presented. Mm-hmm. So at 13 months old, she was speaking in full sentences.
Whoa.
She could tell you, you know, T is for table or S is for sun or all these brilliant things. But as she started progressing in her speech, although there were a lot of words, I noticed that a lot of them were scripted. She would memorize things from TV shows or books, and she would apply them appropriately, but it wasn't a free thought. And then I noticed there was a lot of echolalia, repeating. So if I said, "I love you, Campbell," she would go, "I love you, Campbell," instead of "I love you, Mom." Mm. So she was taking in those words and repeating them the way they came in. And so my antennas were starting to go up, and then I started noticing, you know, I had her and all the mommy and me groups, and all the little toddlers would kind of always walk away from their parents, but they always looked back for them. They always came back, and Campbell never would.
Okay.
She would just keep walking, which we now know is called elopement.
Yes. I'm very familiar with eloping.
yes. So it was those little things that were kind of, you know, drawing my attention. By 18 months old, when she was opening her Christmas present, she started flapping with joy, which we now know is stimming,
right.
A form of stimming. So all of these little things, but doctors at first were like, "Oh, she's just smart and quirky," because as we know, a lot of the research is done on males with autism.
Yeah, that's true.
And a lot of it's outdated. Yeah, so girls are still this big enigma. And so it wasn't until she was three where finally this gap was widening between her and her peers that we were able to get a diagnosis for her.
How did you feel when you finally got that diagnosis?
I mean, you think it would be one of those, like, I told you so moments where you're like, you know, "Hey guys, I'm relieved now because you're seeing what I'm seeing."
Right.
And even though I knew it to be true in my heart for a long time, that's not how I felt. I felt like, yes, we were out of that limbo stage, the stage of worrying and wondering, which is just so, so hard. But I also felt like, okay, this is the beginning of something I know nothing about, and I'm scared, and I feel alone. I don't know anybody else with a child with autism. And that was part of the reason that inspired me to open my private journal eventually, because it was my Hail Mary attempt to just find one person who could understand. I knew by the statistics there had to be other people in my life actively that had a child with autism. Where were they? No one was speaking of it.
Yeah. And that is lonely. And it is scary. I felt exactly the same way. And in our family, we didn't have, I can't even think of a distant cousin that is on the spectrum, you know? So it was like, we felt like, okay, we have to trailblaze this ourselves. We know nothing. All right. And then talk about Eli. So then Eli comes along and, you know, as you were just saying, like, boys and girls manifest autism very differently. So what was it with Eli?
Totally differently. So it's very interesting to have two children, same genetics, same household, same diagnosis, very different presentation. So it was almost learning autism all over again. He had more of those classical symptoms of autism you would think about, like the speech delay with articulation and number of words.
Now, do you think, Stephanie, that you were like on heightened alert because of Campbell? Because, you know, 100%. Doctors will tell you like, oh, well, boys just talk later. You don't need to worry about that. I mean, were you hearing that? Or was it like, no, her daughter has this, so we, like, it's just everything's on the radar.
I think, so everything was on the radar for me, and I think I had proven myself to the diagnosticians at that point that I was a credible source of information. So with Eli, we were able to receive his diagnosis by about 18 months. But I started, and, you know, for anybody listening that has one child on the spectrum and is considering having another child or is looking at a young sibling, here's the deal. One or two traits of autism don't always equal autism, right? We all, you know, it's a very vast and wide spectrum. So just because, you know, they may present with a speech delay does not mean they're essentially on the spectrum. So I say that preferencing that things can go one way or another. For us, it did result in a diagnosis of autism. So we had that classical speech delay. I noticed things even early on, like you would give him a little snack bag, you know, some Cheez-Its or something like that, and he wouldn't stick his hand in the bag. So it was like that certain sensory things that were really bothersome to him. He had more behavioral episodes and outbursts than my daughter did, probably for lack of words and communication, and he had greater sensory needs. So those were some of our earliest signs with Eli. So he's now six and doing very well.
Oh, it looks like both of your kids are doing great. And I think that's interesting that you talk about the different needs, because, you know, we always hear, if you know one autistic person, you know one autistic person. And have you found that your friends like try to relate, like, oh, so-and-so, they did this, and oh, I've seen this? And are you just always thinking like, oh, bless your heart, you have no idea?
Yeah, I think people like to, you know, are always well-intended.
Yes, it comes from a good place.
Comes from a good place. Often it can be not the right thing to say in the moment to somebody who, you know, they're trying to make you feel better, but they just don't get it unless they're living it too.
It is interesting as the parent where you're always just kind of in your own part of the journey.
Oh, for sure. And I think that's the power of having people around you who truly understand, and also remembering that your family's story is so unique. And that's where on Instagram, I'm here to tell our story. And if parts of it resonate with someone, awesome. I'm so glad those words rippled out to you and can help you. But also, it's, as with everything, it's a slippery slope with comparison.
Yeah.
It's a wide spectrum, as is a wide life for typically developing individuals like ourselves.
Well, and I loved on your Instagram account, because I obviously felt like connected to you and kind of some of the things you were saying, because I really appreciate the honesty and the authenticity about it. So when you got the diagnosis with Eli, how were you feeling at that point? Because now you have two kids. Were you overwhelmed? Were you, and your husband still has this heart condition? And I'm sure you have felt at times like, this is all on me. Like, ultimately, I have to figure this out. I'm the one.
Yes, 100%. I mean, especially when, you know, Sean was navigating the heart disease, but also a broken back. So think about just simple things that now become your responsibility, taking out the trash or, you know, driving the kids. His heart has stopped twice since the initial flatline.
Wow.
He does have an implanted defibrillator that has brought him back to us both times. And thankfully, he has been in a safe place when he's gone down, because there is no warning. So you can imagine how that, you know, how that affects us in our daily living, even now. Every time, you know, if I'm not available and he has to pick up the kids from school, it's like, oh boy, you're really resting on faith that he doesn't flatline in that moment, that he has my entire family in the car and I lose everybody.
So how tough is that on a day-to-day basis? Just not like having that in the back of your mind. How are you dealing with that?
Oh, I think it, you know, I think it depends on the day. I think it depends on the moment. But I would say that it's amazing how you can adapt to trauma. I've learned that along my life, that this is just my norm. And I know outsiders look at it and think, oh my gosh, that would rock me. And I'd be in bed all day crying my eyes out. And it's like, look, you just learn to carry on. You learn to persevere. And I also learned to relinquish a lot of things. I mean, my faith was completely renewed after all of this, all of this that happened to my family. It was a complete demolition and rebuild of faith and family for me. And so there's parts of it that I have to just say, I'm going to surrender this,
right?
Because otherwise I'm going to go insane. That's the honest truth.
Right.
So you do what you can, you do the most you can, and then you give up some of that control.
And I do think giving up that control is a huge blessing in a way, you know, because we're all, and you talk about having to be so perfect on social media. And here in Utah, we are just a keeping up with the Joneses society here. I mean, everyone has to be perfect. Your kids' hair has to be perfect. Your kids have to be perfectly dressed when they leave the house. And I mean, for a while, my husband was like, because my son, who's six, loves to dress up. He's always in costume. And my husband at one point was like, I don't want Asher going out into the neighborhood as Aladdin. I don't want him going out into the neighborhood riding his bike as Peter Pan. And there became this moment where it's like, well, who is that hurting? You know, is that hurting your pride? Because Asher's loving it and our neighbors love him unconditionally. So, you know, it was like there are these things. And I think sometimes it's good for us as adults to learn what really matters.
I mean, and to that point, that's a beautiful illustration of the fact that there may be another child in that neighborhood that is wanting to put on the Peter Pan outfit and is seeing him lead by example and be his authentic self, which always allows someone else to be their authentic self. So I'm a big believer in that. Like, live your life out loud, and whoever it resonates with, awesome. All
no,
the better.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's also this huge part of me where it's like, I need the neighbors and all the kids to know about autism. So they know that, oh yeah, we have this kid in our neighborhood. He's always dressed in costume and he's awesome and he does this, you know. So going forward in their lives, this is just part of their experience with autism as well, and helps that inclusion, helps that acceptance, all of that type of thing too.
For sure. I mean, we live in a very similar climate here in my neighborhood and in the area I'm in. And it's part of the reason why I have a TED Talk. When I could pick anything, the title was The Problem with Being Perfect.
Okay, can we talk about that for a second? Because I mean, I saw that. I'm like, oh, I would want to watch that, even if, you know, you didn't have all these connections with me, with our lives. But will you talk about hiding in plain sight and your social media journey with this whole thing? Because we sort of touched on it, but 2 years in, you're like, I am putting this out there.
Yes. Yeah. So I, you know, sat at the kitchen table, shaky fingers on the keyboard. Should I do this? Should I not? And I just took a deep breath, hit public, made everything everyone's business. And to my surprise, you know, as I said prior, my initial hope was to find one person who could understand. And I mean, I think within minutes, I found hundreds.
Right.
And people were DMing and messaging me. People I'd known for years. People I'd known from high school.
Interesting.
I have a child on the spectrum. I've gone through, now I told my whole story. So it's very colorful, as I said, with abuse and anxiety and miscarriages, infertility, you know, all of these different things. And so I was getting so many people saying, me too, me too, me too. I've never told anyone this before, but I want to tell it to you. Mm-hmm. So I kind of summarized my story and I wrote it, and it was called A Peek Behind the Picket Fence. And I told the story you can't see in photos, and that went viral. And that's how now I have all of the great blessings in my life, personally and professionally. People were like, you're really, you know, you have a great story, but you're a great speaker and writer. And so that led into the nonprofit, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But social media was just, it was feeling so icky after all that practice being myself. And there was just, I mean, I was raised to just kind of same as you, like, let's conceal our cracks, post our prettiest moments, project our perfection. And that left me isolated and alone. So I was like,
what is that doing? You know?
Yeah. I'm like, let's lead with vulnerability and see what might happen. And the coolest, coolest part of all of this is I've heard from women in over 100 different countries at this point who all come to me with their stories. And even if their stories are different, if they're not the same or they don't have a child on the spectrum, their feelings are universal. That feeling of like, I'm stuck. I'm hiding in plain sight. I want to scream to the world, this is me. This is who I am. But I feel like I can't. I feel like I will be shunned from my society or my city or the school my children attend. And, you know, there's a really great Glennon Doyle quote that says people will either come around or stop coming around, and either way, great. Right?
Like, wow, I love that. You know, yes.
You know, and that's the attitude I have now, where if this isn't for you, if I scare you with my vulnerability, then you're not my person to start with. Now,
yeah,
of course,
and that's okay.
There's social
right.
Yeah, in social context, right? Like, I don't walk into Chick-fil-A and be like, hi, I'll have a number 3 and I have depression, right? There's a time and a place to disclose these things. But man, the freedom I feel now. And I always tell people, start small. Start with that trusted best friend that you haven't, you know, told something to, or start with a therapist. Just have a space to be yourself. Start with a private Instagram. You never know what might happen.
And I did love how you said that, you know, you felt like humans, regardless of our experiences, because they are all different, we want connection. I mean, we do.
Yeah.
And sort of like the irony of all this connecting on social media is at times it can leave us feeling really isolated and alone. And you talked about, you know, like numbing, that numbing effect of scrolling through the feed and that type of thing. And man, like, why do we do that to ourselves? Because we do.
Ugh. I know, we do. I mean, I think it's a way to tap out of life in a way. If you're not, you know, turning to food or or alcohol, maybe you're turning to what has become super accessible. It's in the palm of our hand every day.
Right.
And it's a way to check out. But the problem is, you know, it's a lot of entertainment, but no like valid information.
Right.
We're getting fed all sorts of things that may not be beneficial to our mental health. And for me, scrolling was making it worse.
Right.
I was seeing all these perfect families and perfect vacations and all these kids that were meeting milestones.
And it's like, I'm tired and exhausted and my skin looks bad and I just found some stretch marks, you know?
Sure. Like, where's the people that look like me?
Right.
And the thing is, they're out there.
Yes, they are.
You attract what you put out.
Right.
And so if I'm putting out my perfect moments, guess what I'm getting back?
Yeah.
I'm getting back the same.
Yeah, and literally from the algorithms. Okay, so Stephanie talks about the purpose of pain and redefining that. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk more about that. So stay with us. Welcome back to Celebrating the Spectrum. We are talking with Stephanie Hanrahan, and Stephanie's husband has a heart condition. He needs a heart transplant at some point. She has 2 autistic children, and she talks in her TED Talk about redefining the purpose of pain. So, Stephanie, I love how you touch on this. When your husband collapsed, he would have died when his heart stopped had he not hit the dresser. Was it the dresser? Is that what he hit?
Yes, it was our nightstand.
The nightstand.
Very conveniently placed, thank goodness.
Right, right. And what a blessing. So you talk in your TED Talk about the purpose of pain. So kind of go into that with me a little bit.
Yeah, I think that pain, I think we've gotten misinformation on what pain is and what it can be used as. And so, you know, of course, we want to avoid physical pain. Mm-hmm. We want to avoid emotional pain. All of those things are scary and hard. But here's the deal. No one gets through a broken life unbroken. So it's going to happen. We're all going to have our version of pain. Yours might be different than mine, but at the end of the day, it's all relative. So what do we do with that? What do we do when the hardships come? Because inevitably they will. And for a long time, I grieved and I sat in it and I stuck in it. And then I realized that pain can be such a catalyst to finding your people and your purpose.
Yeah. How did you pull yourself out of that, though? How did you, you know, have that recognition like, okay, I got to figure this out?
I mean, I wish there was some lightning bolt moment or like big grand thing I could tell people like, hey, if you're grieving, here's what you do. And then it's done. But that's just not the case. I think if you scroll back to my very first post on Instagram, when it was my private journal and my diagnosis day, and you kind of work your way through, you don't see this big aha moment, but you do see little tiny progressions here or there. And I think it was just those, first of all, I had to get up. I had two kids and a husband who couldn't help.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you know, really had no choice. Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that movement, that act of rising every day and doing little things to restore myself and my family. And it is not selfish to focus on yourself at times like this. I think it's the most selfless thing you can do to model a full and complete life as a woman for your children. That's another sidebar topic. But I will say I did those little tiny things to get me through the day. I started making my bed. I was never a bed maker, but like, it felt more complete to like cross something off my list that I knew I could succeed at. Just tiny little movements. I would go take a walk. I would drink the appropriate amount of water. Like, these aren't very glamorous things to share with anybody, but those things add up. You start to feel better when you take care of yourself.
Right.
And then I was able to take care of my children and husband better. Then the grief began to lift. Then I found my way into, you know, groups where back to therapy, groups of women where I could disclose my real self, therapy, all of it, it all makes a difference. But it started with really tiny baby steps within my home.
Well, and it is interesting because our bodies, you know, pain, there is a purpose for pain. It's to protect us ultimately, you know,
it's a signal.
Yeah. We here at the station, we recently had this shooting event that happened, not right here, but out on a story. And we talked to this former, you know, FBI officer, and he gave us this book to read called The Gift of Fear. And I started reading that, and it's just so fascinating. It's, you know, trust yourself. And it's the same thing with pain. There is a purpose for pain, which ultimately can make us stronger. All right. So, Stephanie, tell us about your nonprofit and about your Labeled and Loved podcast.
Yes. So the nonprofit was just another unexpected chapter. I was able to connect with three other women who all love someone with a label. And so we joined forces.
Labeled and Loved. Yes. Okay.
Had to do Labeled and Loved. Yes. And the, and you know, the kind of this, the subcontext of that is there is no label that should ever prevent someone from being loved ever, period.
Right.
So whether your child is labeled, whether you are carrying these labels that the world has given you or that you've given yourself, it doesn't keep you from receiving love and being part of community and receiving connection. And so we created essentially what wasn't available for us when our children were diagnosed. So, you know, diagnosis day, they give you a big stack of papers for your kid. They may give you next steps for your kid.
They may or may not. Right.
Yes. Or likely not.
Yeah. But for your kid,
all these resources, yes. All these resources come for the child, but nothing comes for the parent.
Well, that is fascinating. Right.
Yes. And so that's what Labeled and Loved is. It's a 501c3 nonprofit that provides care for caregivers. So we have a lot of emphasis on connection. So we offer virtual connection where you can join these sisterhood circles that are led by a mentor mom who is background checked and trained. And you meet weekly with your same little group of sisters in your sisterhood circle. And there's always topics and conversations and discussion points. And so you're getting that virtual connection. So you could be anywhere. You could be in the middle of your living room taking care of your kids and still connect with other women.
Right.
And then we have bigger in-person events. We have an annual retreat, 3-day retreat for, you can have a child of any diagnosis, any age. And we are there for the moms. So we are bringing moms this year to Florida, which will be awesome.
That's amazing.
And we're going to travel a new city every year, but that's our big one where you just get to be in a room with women who understand you. And after our last retreat last year, I can tell you it brought me to my knees. The magic of being with people who understand you is life-changing. And then you get to go back out into the world and serve your family better because you have been filled. It's just impossible to pour from an empty cup forever. So,
you know, that's so valid. And I think that I am one that struggles with like kind of asking for that help or admitting that like I'm kind of sinking here, you know, because I think, I mean, with us, we've just been advocating for our son and his school and nonstop, and I'm working full time. And then, you know, it's just like the list never ends. And a couple of weeks ago, I just felt like I don't know if overstimulated is the right word. I just wanted a hotel room for one night, you know, yes. Just because I was just overtouched and overwined and over, you know, so many dishes, so many meals, so many picking up pieces of laundry. And when I get a good night's rest and have a few hours away and maybe get my nails done, it's amazing what that can do. I can only imagine how those moms felt when they got home from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we had an awesome group of moms who attended last year that then went back to their home state and started their own nonprofit. And not that you have to do these big grand things, right? But we have women that from two different sides of the country that became best friends. They met at the retreat. They came alone and they met at the retreat and they have just a connection now. They have someone to call. They have someone to call who understands. I mean, so it's just so powerful to, you know, you never can discount the power of a virtual village. And that's the good side of social media, right? We talked a lot about the negative.
Yeah, but there's a lot of good.
There is. And I think it's, again, going back to that, oh, I'm selfish if I take time away.
Right.
Look, what are you modeling for your children?
Right.
I don't ever want my child, my daughter, to grow up thinking her job as a mom is to be a martyr, that she has to only give and not ever get anything back. I don't want to model that for her. And so, you know, even, you know, as we know, as you know, if you're in a marriage, the divorce rate is something staggering. I think it's like 85% of parents with children with a disability ended up getting divorced. I know that we just did some research studies and we're looking at those at Labeled and Loved. And it said after 19 research studies, there was an increased risk for depression, 95%, and anxiety, 90% in caregivers of the disabled. So it's so valid. And so, yeah, we've just kind of created a safe space for people to be loved and accepted. And same thing with the podcast. We don't just focus on special needs. We also look at, you know, some people that are well known, some people that aren't. We got to talk to Dr. Temple Grandin, to Jen Hatmaker, to Chris Norton, just some great people. And I'm like, hey, I want to look behind your label. Let's not tell a story we've ever heard from you before. Because that's how I got my start.
Right.
So that's kind of what we do on the Labeled in Love podcast, which is really fun.
So I want you to brag for a little bit because, I mean, I know the day in and day out of being a mom of an autistic child. And so to have started this nonprofit, to see that you're helping these parents, how rewarding is that?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it is, I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. I'm not alone anymore. That's where this all started was I'm isolated, I'm alone. And if I stay in this space any longer, I'm scared for myself.
Right.
And so I, every day, get to show up on Instagram or wherever I'm at as myself. And I get to, you know, of course there's criticism, but there's a lot of praise. There's a lot of people who say me too. And that is encouraging.
And what have some of the moms told you that your platform and that retreat and all of that has done for them?
Oh gosh. I mean, I have heard stories of, you know, my marriage is renewed, my faith is renewed, my relationship with my child is better. I think the biggest compliment that I've ever received is someone who had a different background, different faith, different demographic, age demographic, race demographic than myself. And she said, wow, you have made me think differently by reading what you wrote. And it was, I love a good aha moment. That's the best when someone can catch my attention. I go, wow, I've never thought about it that way before.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, you have given me a new set of eyes. And I think that was, it can make me cry now because I'm like, wow, like just by sharing who my children are and who my family is. And so there's a lot of hardships that come with autism and I'm not discounting those, but there is so much hope too. And I would not, I would not have the life I have now without this, without the pain. There's your purpose.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a beautiful thing. And while we do miss out on a lot, and hey, I still fall victim to the scrolling and I think, wow, look at all these 8-year-old girls that are having sleepovers and are, you know, have these big group of friends when my daughter is just praying and hoping for one, you know, one or two that will stick with her. And it's hard and it's sad. And then I remember, well, look what's come from this. She has people all over the world praying for her and cheering for her and rooting her on. And so that is the gift of community and connection that I can pass on to my kids.
And do you feel like this is kind of your calling at this point? I mean, you're obviously so talented at connecting with people. You're a great communicator. You can be the voice here.
Yeah. I mean, I always wanted to be a writer, but and speaking kind of correlates with that, but I went to college for nursing. I was a labor and delivery nurse for many years because I put myself through college. I needed a job when I got out.
I
didn't want to take the risk.
Right.
And I think that there has always been this, you know, thumbprint in my heart going, this is where you're supposed to be. This is what you're called to do.
Right.
And now you have the freedom to do it. And how cool that I don't have to pretend to be someone else to get to do it now. So I am in a stage of yes. If somebody wants me to do something, I'm like, yes, that sounds so fun. And I am just trusting, again, relinquishing control and trusting that personally and professionally, the doors will continue to open.
And I just have to say that if you haven't listened to her TED Talk, It's The Problem with Being Perfect. I got the biggest kick out of you talking about women, talking about their labor and delivery. You know, I mean, it's true. Like, there's no woman that can't tell you every detail from that day. And
isn't that fascinating?
It is. It is fascinating. And, you know, if you go to a baby shower, everyone wants to tell their story. And it never, I mean, we're 50 years old and you're 60 years old. We're still telling those stories. It kind of cracks me up. But
my hope. I was like, look, if you can talk about that kind of physical excruciating pain, then you can talk about your stories and scars too. So let's start doing it.
Yes. No, I love that. All right. And so what do people hear on the Label and Love podcast?
Oh, gosh. Well, we typically interview guests. And as I mentioned before, you know, Dr. Temple Grandin was a big one because I love hearing her insight from someone who was one of the first public figures to represent autism and has done such a beautiful job of that. So she was very interesting to interview. And we've done everything from leaders in the faith sector and actresses and great people who have physical disabilities or no disabilities at all.
Right.
And so it's just a space to kind of maybe some names you'll definitely recognize on there to take a peek behind their label and see what they love. So that's
right. And connect. So with your kids, what is your hope for them for the future?
Oh, I just hope that they are authentically who they were made to be, and they never feel an ounce of shame about that. And we live in a world and a culture, even though we're fighting, people like you and I are fighting against it, that there is a lot of judgment and stigma and a society that doesn't cater to different minds. But I hope that we are raising the first generation of openly neurodiverse kids who are proud and are open to sharing their stories, because I've seen the power of how that can help other people. So that's my greatest
thank
wish.
You so much. Yes, I know. I mean, my whole goal is inclusion. And the reason we chose the name Celebrating the Spectrum is because I was just sick of the negative tone that I heard every time someone talked about autism, because like there are so many things about this that I celebrate. And we would not be the family we are without it. My son would not be who he is without it. And I definitely would not be the mom and woman that I am without that either.
For sure. Pain becoming purpose.
Yes. There. The purpose of pain.
It's all full circle.
Yes. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us. I've learned so much talking to you. I've learned so much following your Instagram account and that power to connect with people on an authentic level. We don't have to be perfect. We like seeing the flaws. It helps us feel like, you know, we're not alone in this journey of life.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. And Celebrating the Spectrum is a KSL podcast.